The Daily Connect podcast, the voice of the RNIB Connect community.
Welcome to the Daily Connect podcast for Tuesday, the 28th of August. Chris Wallace with you for another week of Daily Connect podcasts. And what a show we have in store for you today, as on today's show, we want your stories and feelings on getting a guide dog. InterConnect conversation later in the show, friends Kirsty Cat and Nikki discuss the process and how much having her guide dog, Bass, has changed Kirsty's life. Listen in and join the conversation in all the usual ways. Plus, there's more tech talk today as Mark Evans from the RNIB Technology for Life team reviews the latest Beats by Dr. Dre headphones. Also, it's so important to supply the right information when applying for PIP benefits. We're going to tell you all the information you need to know. And there's a new Society of the Week. We'll be hearing from Matthew about how important Victa has been in his life.
The Daily Connect podcast.
But first off, on today's Daily Connect podcast, Tom Pay, CEO of the Royal Society for Blind Children, has been speaking to Alan Russell about the touring Every Blind Child project, which is on the road again.
The Royal Society for Blind Children is launching its Every Blind Child campaign to dispel the myths around sight loss and share the dreams of blind children and young people with the nation. It'll be done through a touring light poem and video installation by international artist Robert Montgomery. The artwork will travel from Cornwall to Newcastle to show the nation that blind children have the same dreams and potential as anyone else. Now, to tell us more, we have with us from RSBC, Tom Pay. Tell me a little bit more about this particular project. What was the catalyst for it?
Well, when we began to talk to the general public about the issues surrounding being blind as a child, we found an amazing degree of misunderstanding of the problem, and indeed the fact that they thought that even if there was a problem, the government was probably looking after it. So we commissioned some research to go out and find out what the public actually knew about it and compare that to the reality. And we found that there was a huge divergence between how the public viewed childhood sight loss and how the families and the young people themselves were experiencing it. So what we thought was, we need to go out and educate the British public on the real challenges being faced by blind young people, and also to tell them the story, not in a negative way, but in a way which said, I am a parent who has a child who is blind, and these are our aspirations. Get the public to begin to understand that they can play a part in changing things for young people. Because as we know, if you lose your sight in youth, then you are less likely to succeed as your sighted peer.
Interesting, when I was looking at some of the report, Tom, some of the figures were quite shocking in the amount of people who didn't think that blind children could have a career, could socialise, even cook a meal for themselves. I mean, there's some really basic things which people have these misapprehensions around.
You could put it down and say, well, that's understandable because they just don't know. But the problem is the effect of that misunderstanding is a lot of these people are employers, are in positions of influence, and it is because they think in this way that young blind people, when they grow up, don't get the chance to succeed because there is a misconception that they can't succeed.
Tell me about this installation that's travelling around the country, Tom. What is actually showing? What would people see or hear?
It is a van that has been fitted out. On the outside of the van, on the roof, is mounted a light poem. In other words, a short poem which lights up. The poem says, in our dreams we see forever. When we dream, everything is possible. And I think it just captures the moment. And Robert Montgomery picked those words up from the young people themselves. It was how they expressed their view on their lives. On the back of the van is a picture which says, caution, forgotten blind children, And that is absolutely the conclusion of our research. Forgotten by the public, forgotten by government, forgotten by employers, not forgotten by the young people themselves and by parents. So we just wanted to shock people into understanding that there was a problem. Inside the van, there are four screens, and on those screens are recordings of nine children who are telling their life story from their perspective. It is really emotional. Make sure that your friends go there. Make sure that they get their friends to go there. We just want everybody to turn up and see the challenges, or more importantly, what the opportunity is.
Is it equally important to instill in the parents and the children about that hope and that future as well, to show them that, you know, they don't have to be constrained by this, they can succeed in all areas of life?
Well, this is, of course, what the RSBC is all about. It is the family support service is at the core of everything we do. I used to famously say that, you know, the blind baby doesn't know they're blind. It's the parents and everybody else that knows they're blind. And it is their attitudes of how, you know, how we as parents deal with our children, how they grow up. So we have this family support service. We have expert people, the psychotherapists, family counsellors, people who understand family dynamics. And we want to get in there at that time and support parents to give them the confidence and sometimes the additional skills, or sometimes even the peer support that they need to be able to bring their child up, to be able to maximise their potential.
Tom, if people would like to learn more about the installation or about the services from RSBC, how can they do that?
www.rsb.org is our website. If you go on hashtag Every Blind Child, you will find where our bespoke vehicle is going to be. Tell your friends about it. Tweet about it. Retweet the tweet you get. Tell everybody that you know what's going on. And in the end, between us all, we will educate everybody and make a real difference to the lives of blind children.
Tom, best of luck with the project, and thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
And if you want to follow along with the Every Blind Child project, go to Twitter and follow the hashtag Every Blind Child.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Time for more tech talk on the Daily Connect, and Mark Evans from RNIB's Technology for Life team has reviewed the latest Beats by Dr. Dre headphones. Mark is talking to RNIB Connect Radio's Barry Snell.
I'm joined on the phone now by Mark Evans from RNIB's Technology for Life team. And today Mark is going to be talking about a recent purchase, slightly different from the stuff we usually do on the show. But we're going to be talking about the Beats Studio 3 wireless headphones. Hello, Mark.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. Now, I believe you recently acquired a pair of these.
I did. I have recently acquired a pair of these. They are brand new. This is the first day I've had them. They've been out since about September, October last year, the Studio 3. Long story short, created by an American called Dr. Dre and another guy, Mr. Levine. They formulated the Beats brand, and they sold it to Apple for quite a few shillings, and now Apple have taken the design on and they've furthered it. So when you open the box and you reveal the packaging, you slide the top of the box off, and then underneath that the box is in two halves. So you pull the top part of the box off, and within there you actually have a tab that you then pull back, which reveals a dome-shaped hard case with the Beats branding on it, which is a B with like a circle around it, which is very tactile, so you can feel it. Very, very laser rich, still very, very beautiful. And then you move from there, the second tab, a second red tab, and that red tab then reveals underneath the instruction manual, the warranties, the stickers, and within there, also in the bottom of the box, we have a USB cable charging. We have actually a wired wire that goes into the actual headset itself with a control system. for those who don't want to use them wirelessly. We do want to use it wired and plug it in and have that control, which is really cool for people. It gives people that flexibility. Mm. And we also have a clip in there to clip to the casing to help us clip that to our bag or make sure we know where exactly where our casing is. So if you feel the casing, you'll be able to feel that there's actually a zip that only goes one way. And then when I take my headphones out, they're actually sort of molded headphones. They're really, really soft cuffs. And they actually click. And from the click, your headphones lock solid. And you're then able to sort of really admire and examine. You've got the branding on there, which is the quality symbol. You've got the ability there to change the bass level on there. On the one headphone, increase the bass, and you've got a fast forward and a rewind to the next and previous track. And on the other headphone, if you flip it around, you've got a button to actually adjust the bass levels. And also you can actually change the settings in there. You've even got a little slot built in for recording. And so what you can actually do is when you connect it to your iPhone or your other phone, your other smartphone, your Apple, your iPhone or your Samsung Galaxy or whatever the phone may be, you actually then can actually still speak into it. So you can take a call through your headphones, which is very, very useful.
Is that an industry first?
Not an industry first. I think because it has been around in this wireless technology is available in other phones, but the way you can do it is better. The quality of the call is deeper. In terms of it actually improves the sound quality of people's voices, it captures all the inflections,
okay.
Same as it does with the music, with the background of the music and mm-hmm. the foreground of your track. But what is first is the level of quality of the controls. You also have sort of chevrons built into the headset itself. Mine are in red.
Six different colours available, I believe.
Six different colours available, yeah. I've got them in the candy red. There's a white, there's a black, there's a black and gold. The ones that I've seen, and there's probably, I think there's a blue as well. I don't know what the last colour is. It might be a pink, or I'm not quite sure. And very, very popular. And you've got these, as I say, you've got the chevrons that you can adjust on the sides. The cuffs have actually been redefined to make them more spongy, and they actually eventually will mould to the ears. Different people's ear shapes can adjust the position.
Mark, if anyone isn't familiar with Beats or haven't held any in their hands, they're quite big, aren't they? Obviously, they're very striking to look at, but I think people would be surprised how big they are, especially with headphones over the last few years being the small ones that fit into your ears.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. You have a difference between the earphones going in the ear, the earphones that loop over the ear and support on the back of the neck. And some of them have the technology for the microphones in there as well, again, wireless. And then these go over the head and have the sort of the traditional head strap bridge. Despite the size, they're incredibly light and they're incredibly durable. And I'm over the moon, and I would highly suggest anybody who's into their music to go out and try them. You can pop them around the neck comfortably. They will sit around the neck securely. So if you need to walk around with them, you need to take them off to listen to something. Make sure you're safe and secure and happy, and then put your headphones back on. The wireless charging, I believe, is for around 4.5 to 5 hours, from what it says. This is what I'm testing. I'll be testing that more tonight.
Now, you mentioned at the start Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine.
Yes, correct, Jimmy Iovine.
I don't know about you, Mark. There was a documentary on a few months ago called The Defiant Ones, just talking about how that collaboration came together. And Jimmy Iovine had said that when they were looking to design these, they didn't want the little in-your-ear ones. They wanted it to be a statement, as in, our headphones are where's the party headphones. Is that the kind
correct.
Of sound you feel you get from them?
Definitely. I listen to a great range of music. I do like some of the types of music that Dre produces, for sure. I'm not going to lie about that. And for people who love the quality of their sound, of their music, or wanting to listen to a file, you can it actually takes you through, and it seems like the way the sound is projected is very rich in terms of the background sound of the music and all the details and perfections of the music, but also the way that it sort of it warms and makes the lyrics quite soft and enables them to be sort of clear as well.
I believe it also has a feature called Pure ANC, Adaptive Noise Cancelling. I'm presuming, Mark, That means if you have your headphones on, no noises leaking out. If you were sitting on a train, you're not annoying the people round about you. Is that what that means?
That's, I was coming to that, absolutely correct. Sure. You're absolutely 100% in terms of the filtering of the noise in and the noise out. I put these on this morning, and obviously if you're in a, you're travelling on the train, you don't want to be disturbed, or like me, I sit myself on the bus and you don't want to hear the kids, or you just want to sort of go into your own world. They're fantastic for that.
So how durable are they, Mark?
They're very durable, but what I would say to people is take your case with you that you get within the actual product that you see the circular sort of hard case. And what you would then do is you would then gently press just below the chevrons, press in the headphones in, and you sort of fold the headset in. You don't have to apply a lot of pressure. Finger and thumb, and you just press, and it clicks. If you press it in the right way, fold them down, put them in the case, zip the case up. It's got a nice tactile feel in the middle of it, so you can feel where the zip is, and then just pop them in your bag or wherever you go, and your headphones are safe, and they're away in storage.
Now they are pricey, but you've just bought a pair, so it's your job to sell this to the listener. How much do they cost, and why should we consider getting a pair?
I think they are perceived as quite pricey, yes. The price of the headphones, they can range from, I got mine a little bit of a deal. You usually around about the £300 mark for a pair of headphones, which is, I realise, is quite a lot of money. It's the quality of them and the level of
durability, would it be?
The level of durability, the level of sound. You can also get what I did with mine is I bought through Amazon. Obviously, you can go through Apple, you can go through other retailers. See if you can get a sort of guarantee in there for breakages or damages, electronic damage, as well as probably having them on your home insurance. The more cover that you get with something, I think is always beneficial. You have to sometimes look at the value of laying out that cover. But mine was sort of £30 and assured by Amazon, and that's why I picked that up. But yeah, very, very pleased. I realise they're not for everybody. You've got the AirPods option, the little in-ear ones. You have the options from Bose. Bose produce them for around $240, $250, which are probably equally as good in their series.
They would be the main rivals, would they?
Correct. They are the main rivals, the Bose ones. And I did a lot of debating between the two. And I did try them both before I decided to go with this product, and I've been very, very happy so far. It's down to personal preference as to what people choose, like with anything.
Sure. And for blind and partially sighted people, you feel they're quite accessible?
I feel they're very accessible. There's a tactile button to press into on the left cuff, just by the left ear cuff, and to switch on. You'll hear it actually beep and make a sound when you've got the headset on, so you know it's on. It plays an audible tune. And does the same when you turn it off. It'll show on your iPhone or whatever device you're using that you're connected. And it's quite simple to just tap to actually pair, to connect. It's just one tap and one double tap if you're using VoiceOver, single tap if you're using Mag. That's it. Very, very easy, and I'm assuming it's the same on all devices. But yeah, very much so. The tactileness of the sockets for charging USB is clear on the other headphone, on the right one. And you also have the wire, feel an indent where the wire is, a sort of a little circular indent if you ever wanted to plug it in and use them wired with the control if people want to. So yeah, I think the design is excellent.
So Mark, if anyone listening would like any more advice on these headphones or any other technological product, how can they find out more information?
Okay, so there's two ways they can get in touch with us. The first is, I would say, is to get in touch with us via the helpline, which is the main way people do it. So by calling 0303 123-9999. That's 0303 123-9999, and asking the technology for life. The second is, if they are being a little bit more confident and they have the technology, they can send us an email, and the address is as follows. It's TFL, so Tommy Foxtrot Lima, at rnib.org.uk, and we look forward to your inquiry.
Brilliant. Mark Evans has given his official seal of approval to the new Beats Studio 3 wireless headphones. Mark, pleasure as always. Thank you for talking to us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much for having me. Take care.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Time for this week's Connect Conversations, and it's about guide dogs. Nikki is considering getting a guide dog. She recently sat down with friends Kirsty and Kat and found out what prompted Kirsty's decision to apply for her guide dog, Bass. She found out what the process was and how it has changed Kirsty's life.
Hello, my name's Kirsty James. I'm a digital skills officer for RNIB Cymru. I have Stargardt's disease and Charles Bonnet syndrome, and I'm registered blind.
Hello, my name is Kat. I'm a complementary therapist. I lost my sight 20 years ago due to retinopathy, optic eye disease, cataract and glaucoma, and I'm self-employed.
Hi, I'm Nikki Kelly. I'm a singer-songwriter and I'm also a community facilitator for RNIB. My sight conditions are optic atrophy and keratoconus, which were a result of intracranial hypertension.
In 2014, I'd moved back to Wales from Hereford. And I was living in Caerphilly and was a complementary therapist for Cancer Careline. And I just felt that I was ready to have a guide dog. My life was in the right place.
Okay, so what made you feel ready to have a guide dog?
I just felt that I wasn't getting out of the house on my own. I was working 2 days a week as a complementary therapist, and I just was ready just to sort of get my life back together and have more independence, because I was relying on a lot of people, you know, just to go to the shop, a basic thing of picking up even a pint of milk. I had to wait for somebody to take me, and I was relying on my husband heavily. And my friend Kat, who's here, she had a guide dog, and I've been around her a long time with her guide dog. And I always knew something I wanted. I just knew my life wasn't ready. You know, your cane skills have to be up. You know, you can't just have a guide dog if you're not getting on a bus and things. And that was my motivation, really, to use my cane more, was having a guide dog. Because I had to get on the bus, go into town. Even though I was still with somebody, I was using a cane.
Yeah.
So guide dogs came out and gave me an assessment. And that's when they said, yes, you can have a guide dog, but you do still need to work on your cane skills. And I had a rehabilitation officer come out, and she helped me with certain little routes into town, getting on the bus. And I just built that up over the year or so that I was waiting for a guide dog. And I remember that time was just, you're on edge, just waiting for that phone call to say, we have a match. Yeah. And then I remember it was the 28th of November, and I had the call, we have a guide dog for you. And this was 28th of November 2014, and I was just over the moon, nervous and anxious, thinking, this is it. And I started my training and qualified on Christmas Eve. So I've been matched with Bass 3 years.
Perfect Christmas present.
It was absolutely amazing. And it's hard work, you know, all of having to learn assertiveness, because they're just like pups, really, when they come. He's 18 months and he was wild, very stubborn. I just remember that first year. It was hard, really hard. There was times when I just wanted to give up, because you just have to keep going. And I just picture, right, it's all going to be good. He's a pup. It's me that's being stressed, because my anxiety levels are still very high. You know, leaving the house on my own was a huge thing, and the dog picks up on that. And I suppose it just taught me how to be in the now and using mindfulness and really taking care of myself to control the anxiety levels. But having a dog was a really good distraction in those moments.
Because you were telling me, weren't you, Kirsty, once, that because of your anxiety sometimes, just having Bass with you to stroke.
Yes.
And
I'd say that was the biggest impact Bass has had for me, is travelling to places. You know, up until November last year, even though I had Bass for a year or so, I was still just going on the bus, getting on the train to Hereford on my own, or getting on the bus to the local town and going to visit my friend. Still wasn't very independent. I was in a little bubble, I would say, of my little comfort zone. And I just knew that Bass deserved more. And that's when I joined RNIB in January. And that's really where my independence just flourished, because I all of a sudden had to get on the train to work every day. So Bass was a whole new environment for me. being on busy trains and without baths, I couldn't do it. And that's the only, and now all of my achievements this year, baths has been a big contributor to that. Yeah. Travelling to London, Birmingham, Leeds on the train, and just having him there just is a companion more than anything. Has really made my independence grow and give me fuel again to be a free spirit like I was before I lost my sight.
Yeah. So you mentioned that guide dogs got in touch with you. So when you decided you wanted a guide dog, did you have to do anything or?
Yeah, I just contacted guide dogs and said, I'm interested in having a dog. And then the engagement officer came out to see me and they just go through all the process and ask you lots of questions about your life because, you know, your life has to be appropriate for a dog to come into, you know, where you live, your lifestyle and everything. Yeah. And I was ready for that. Bass was my focus, so I knew that going out on nights out and things, it helped me sort of calm my life in a way because I had a focus. So I would think, oh, I don't want to go out partying all weekend, because I want to look after Bass and free run Bass and take him up the mountain and and take him to really good fun places. And a free run is exhilarating for me. I still remember the day I took him on my own. And I just walking down the path and I just cried. And I was just like, this is amazing. I've got my life back. Yeah. And I just remember that freedom and that feeling I held on to. And that's what I've created this year to be about.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, you've been matched up well with Bass?
Oh, and yeah.
Personality and...
Definitely. Stubborn. quite excitable, but very calm at the same time.
And like, what about Bass?
yeah. He's moody. Very sensitive. He's such a sensitive dog. And he's so professional. I do say to him sometimes, come on, Bass, lighten up. Life doesn't mean to be that serious, but that's what keeps me on the straight path of keeping focused and achieving goals. And I don't mean like huge goals, just little goals. Like each step, traveling somewhere on my own, I remember going to Leeds, and this was to do with work for training. And I traveled up with Bass and then had to find the hotel on my own, had to find the room and then somewhere to go and eat on my own. I remember being in the hotel room and just crying with just sheer happiness that I've done it. And I just was like so grateful to Bass. I remember just hugging him and just going, I just can't believe a dog has done this.
Yeah.
And that's just so freeing. And I think that's what gave me the confidence for Glastonbury and things. And Bass was also a big part of our wedding day. He was the ring bearer and he had the rings. He had my, where I used to work, my lovely old boss made a suit jacket on the front that velcroed on the back. It was awesome. It had like the jacket and a little dicky bow and shirt. Just like, she was so creative and amazing at what she'd done. And he walked down the aisle with me. Then had the rings and he just looked dapper. He loved it. Yeah. He was all over it. Having him there throughout that day, a big, you know, getting married with sight loss, it's a huge thing for me. For me as well, that was about getting married, was about reclaiming my power, about the things that I wanted to do and what I wanted. And it was a very emotional process because of course, it comes with different challenges that you have to overcome yourself, like not being able to see yourself in your dress and things. But, you know, that all came and I felt all the textures and stuff. And that, what I thought was going to be challenges, actually going through it wasn't.
No.
So it wasn't any problems.
And it was the most emotional wedding I've ever been to. Nikki, everybody cried. All day, all night.
Even the registrar was crying. She said she'd never had a wedding like it.
It was with happiness, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and proudness and what you've achieved as well. You and Tom, it wasn't just tears for you.
No.
It was for you, Tom and Bass, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I walked down the aisle to a drum and bass track.
That's a surprise.
And it was lots of amazing drum and bass actually throughout the ceremony, and it just summed us up as a couple.
Perfect.
Yeah. Very big live wires. And Bass has been through amazing milestones in my life so far. I'm just excited to see where we're going to go with and in the future and what the future holds for us, because I'm just proud to take him places. And he's four now, so he's getting calmer and he's so well behaved. You know, we go to all meetings and he just stays. He's got so much patience. I have, but he got a lovely life as well. We go all sorts of places on free runs. So, yeah, my experience of a guide dog has definitely been the best thing, that the start of my journey, I suppose, of acceptance of my sight loss and acknowledging that I actually have sight loss as well in a real positive way. And overcoming my anxiety, depression, I think, was a big contributing factor of having a guide dog.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Just putting a pin in today's Connect conversation to remind you that we want your stories and feelings on getting a guide dog. How was the process for you? Has having a guide dog changed your life as drastically as it's changed Kirsty's? Do join the conversation. There's many ways to do it. You can tweet us at RNIB Radio, or you can find us on Facebook, RNIB Connect Radio. You can, of course, email us radio@rnib.org.uk or give us a call on 0345 602 0025. Back to the conversation now between Kirsty, Nikki and Kat.
The Daily Connect podcast.
My experience of a guide dog has definitely been the best thing, that the start of my journey, I suppose, of acceptance of my sight loss and acknowledging that I actually have sight loss as well in a real positive way. And overcoming my anxiety, depression, I think, was a big contributing factor of having a guide dog.
Yeah. And I think as well, people don't necessarily realise that, a dog might be there to guide you, but it clearly, because I didn't realise how much it really does change people's lives. Like, I just think it's great, because I use a cane and that, you know, helps me get from A to B, and that's that. And I guess, you know, with yourself, it's helped calm anxiety and things like that. It's just so much more than just a dog that helps you get somewhere, isn't it?
And it hasn't come without its challenges. You know, as much as it has been an incredible positive experience, it's been really difficult at times. You've got responsibilities for this dog and making sure you're keeping on top of the training. You can't get lax. You have to be firm and keep them structured. And, you know, I've had my fair share of access issues.
Yeah.
Taxi refusals, restaurant refusals. I do think that it's a very scary time when you refuse, because you're in just disbelief that somebody's discriminating against you. And it did take its toll on me when I had a number of issues. And I just had to be thinking, right, well, reassure myself that not everybody's like that, that it's just particular people have issues. I think that it's helped me remain calm. So in those situations where I want to, like, blow up and be really, really angry, that how dare you refuse me and things, I just stay calm and say, okay, if you're not going to let me in, then I think guide dogs will be in contact. And I just sort of leave there, because it's no good for me to be angry, because it doesn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
I think I remember as well, you got refused once, and I think you wanted to do it for other guide dog owners that might not have been as educated as you and calm and... Do you remember one?
That's exactly why I did complain. For other guide dog owners that just hasn't, you know, they've just been matched with a guide dog, their self-esteem is still building. You know, they might have been in the same situation as me, never been out on their own for a long time since they lost their sight. And I just thought, how would they feel? That could jeopardise the whole working relationship. It could stop them from growing in independence and living a life full to themselves. And that's why I became very passionate about the campaigning and things that this has made aware of, how refusing somebody, how it can affect them, make you feel. So just remember feeling very anxious and traumatised for a while. It took me time to bounce back from that. But I had amazing support from various people, including colleagues in RNIB and guide dogs, and support throughout. And that's what helped me get through it, really.
Being refused somewhere, I think, again, people don't tend to believe that it happens, do they?
Yeah, and it's you know, you go out for a meal with your friends and your family. You're all looking forward to this particular restaurant and you get refused. It's embarrassing because then your whole plans, you're like, well, what do you do now? Mm-hmm. Where do you go now? And it affects that moment. Mm. Yeah.
And how do people, so if you've been in a situation where you've been refused and you've been with people as well as your guide dog, how have the people with you reacted?
Just shocked. I remember it happened in one restaurant and the other people actually sitting having a meal was just so disgusted. They became very vocal and a couple actually walked out.
Yeah.
And if you're going to refuse guide dog, we're not eating here either. And yeah. walked out.
Yeah, I've had that.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
But Kat's been a great strength throughout this journey of times when I have been struggling with things. Kat's helped because Kat's also an experienced guide dog owner. But I just focus on all of the amazing, wonderful, positive things that a guide dog brings and how my life has just improved massively and helped me. You know, I'm not embarrassed to have a guide dog, and I will admit this, I was embarrassed using a cane. Yeah. I was ashamed, and because it was like it was the first time I had a label that I was visually impaired.
Yeah.
But having a dog, it just took that, and just not embarrassed to have him at all, and proud, really proud.
Yeah.
I think as well that because, you know, I really struggle to start using my cane. Like you say, it's the first public outing, isn't it, almost, that you're visually impaired. And do you think maybe, because like with a dog and guide dogs, obviously it's got the harness on, if I'm right. Does everyone, because I know, do people always use harnesses or am I just...
Yeah.
And so like with that, there's other people who are sighted have dogs as well, so it's just, it's not necessarily, apart from obviously you've got the harness on, it's not necessarily something that no one else is going to have, whereas with a cane, it's like, it's just pure vulnerability, I think.
I found using a cane and then having a guide dog, you seem to get more help having a guide dog.
Definitely. Everybody wants to help you, and just like everyone wants to talk to you, which is like, I know it frustrates some guide dog owners, but I really like that you're educating them, aren't you? People are curious. Mm-hmm. Of course you come across some of the people who talk to the dog instead of you, and you get asked all sorts of crazy questions, but at least they're asking and wanting to find
out.
You know, not being rude.
Yeah,
of course that you do get, it's funny, you have lots of situations.
And how was your experience? You went to give a talk, didn't you, not long ago?
Yeah, I went to a school for National Eye Health Week, actually, to give a talk to the primary school children, and that was lovely. I asked them to ask questions and things, and they asked amazing questions, a lot better than what adults do, and actually paid interest of things, and I was just blown away by their reaction, really. The thirst to learn.
Yeah, that's right.
That's amazing.
Because you also have given talks in lots of schools, haven't you, about guide dogs?
Yeah, from play school, you know, to university students, to, you know, elderly groups. And like you say, they're all different, the questions they ask. Children have just no concept, do they, of what questions they're about to ask you, whereas some adults think, oh, I don't know whether I should ask that or not.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you, ladies.
Very positive.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it's been a pleasure.
Bye.
We'd love you to join the conversation. If you would like to let us know how you feel about the subjects we have covered today, please tweet us at RNIB Radio or email radio@rnib.org.uk, or you can even get in touch using the Contact Us button on our fully accessible website, www.rnibconnectradio.org.uk. Thank you for listening.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This year marks RNIB's 150th anniversary. To celebrate, we've been asking the blind and partially sighted community for their stories and experiences of sight loss. We will be sharing these stories over the coming months to document the changes we've seen in the last 150 years. Today it's the story of Aniba Ahmed, who says, I have been volunteering with RNIB for 2 years, I work a lot with the fundraising department, getting involved with projects like Dots Raise Lots. I have also taken part in fun runs for RNIB and Bardet-Biedl syndrome. I have recently started volunteering for RNIB Connect, which will involve me organising events to raise awareness of the charity. I would like to say that without the support of my friends, family, RNIB and BBS UK, I wouldn't be the person I am today. They have all helped me with my independence and confidence. I would say to anyone, don't let your disability stop you from achieving your dreams and goals in life. If you are interested in sharing your story, please complete the submission at www.rnib.org.uk/150stories.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Time for the Daily Connect Society of the Week. And this week, it's VICTA, who support children and young people who are blind or partially sighted, along with their families across the UK. VICTA organises activities designed to improve the emotional, social and living skills of the children and young people they support. Matthew now talks of how important VICTA has been in his life.
Hello, I'm Matthew. I'm 23 years old. I came to know VICTA very well, properly, for the first time in 2012, when they stepped in to help fund and continue the UK's attendance of the International Camp for Computing and Communications, which is an international youth camp for blind and visually impaired people from all across Europe that takes place every summer. The lady who'd previously helped the UK group to attend could no longer get the funding together, and VICTA stepped in to provide the support and organisation that we needed to keep sending groups to it. On this camp, I've been to Vienna, Athens, and in 2012, Cluj in Romania. And just to me, an international camp like that is the summit of the incredible activities and experiences for children, young people, and families as well, with the younger kids as well, that VICTA helps people to enjoy and to experience. I find it difficult sometimes to make activities and experiences happen, and know of people that find it even harder. But having done so many wonderful things, whether at home or abroad, I know how much these sorts of experiences, getting to meet people, getting to row through parks in the middle of Romania's second city, or getting to climb Snowdonia and go to Zip World in North Wales with VICTA, which is another activity I've done with them. These sorts of things, they're not just fun, it's not just an opportunity to make friends, but I know that all the experiences I've had have helped make me happy and confident and interesting. And it's these sorts of things that VICTA, for me, helps to make happen for all of us who are young and live with sight loss, so that more of us can become rounded, interesting and really confident adults and succeed in life. I made some incredible friends on the international camp, spending a whole week staying at a boarding school for the blind in the middle of a great city like Romania or Athens or Vienna. You're spending all that time together, going for breakfast in the mornings, doing great workshops in the daytime like photography or ballroom dancing, or getting to tear a computer apart and find out all the fascinating things inside. And then evening activities as well, like blind laser shooting, where you shoot the guns at each other, which I won as well with a good friend from the German contingent. Not only have I had brilliant times like that on VICTA activities, but on others like my trip with them to North Wales and Snowdonia, it was brilliant to find one or two of those friends from the international camps there again, and to make more as well. And even though I have so many fully sighted friends at university, it is so much easier to relax and not feel pressure when I am with my partially sighted friends. There's just not the pressure to be as independent as I normally have to force myself to be. And that makes things a bit more relaxing and just means I can enjoy myself to a whole other level. The trouble I have now is having made all of these great friends who are all across the UK, from the south coast to the likes of the northeast of England in Nottingham, Newcastle and other places. Now I'm up in the west of Scotland. It's a heck of a long way to go and visit some people. So that's probably one of my future challenges that I've got to work on, is keeping in touch with all these great friends as we continue to do exciting things in life that great experiences like those Victor can provide have helped us to come on to.
The Daily Connect podcast.
When applying for PIP benefits, it's so important that you supply the correct information. Roland Myers has been trying to navigate the pitfalls of this difficult process, so you don't have to.
The problem with saying that the Disability Living Allowance is being replaced by Personal Independence Payment, or PIP for short, is that many people will think they've heard it all before. A lot, in fact. Others will say it's already happened, and others may be only slightly aware of this fundamental change to the benefit system. The Department for Work and Pensions, DWP for short, is in the process, and it has been for some time, of rolling out the new benefit PIP across the whole of the UK. But it's taking longer than expected, with emphasis now apparently being placed on getting it right rather than getting it done quickly. But every blind or partially sighted person aged 16 to 64 has been, is being, or will be affected, as for them, Disability Living Allowance is going. To get the latest, we spoke to Richard Holmes from RNIB's campaigns team, who, for the benefit of those yet to receive notification of the change, talked us through the process.
Every recipient of DLA will receive a letter, and I quote, inviting them, unquote, to apply for PIP. It's absolutely essential that recipient doesn't ignore that letter, because it's a very short time frame they have to be able to apply. It's only going to be a few weeks, and if they don't apply for PIP, the Disability Living Allowance will stop. So it's essential that they make the phone call, give a few pieces of basic information, name, address, national insurance number, etc., to commence the process. It's absolutely vital that happens. After that stage, then a much longer, much more detailed form is sent out, and there's 28 days to fill that form in and return it to further progress the PIP application process. And if assistance is needed to fill that form in, then again, it's essential that the phone call is made to say, I'm a blind person, I shall need someone to fill this form in for me. Can you give me an extension? And to be fair, they're usually very good about doing that. However, it's also worth noting that at the point of application, at the point of the first telephone call, that any recipient alerts the advisor to how they would like to receive the information in the form. We're finding that quite a lot of the onus is on the individual to know enough to ask some of the questions, that people aren't almost receiving the information in a form they themselves can read. So they might get a large print form, but they might prefer to have it in email. Well, they might want the Braille information package that goes with the form, but if you don't know what to ask for, you don't know what you're going to get. So in a nutshell, PIP replaces Disability Living Allowance, and everyone on Disability Living Allowance will have to apply for PIP.
And so how far through the process are we? I know it started some time ago. When do they reckon that the whole of the UK will have moved across to PIP?
Initially, they were quite ambitious timetable set for it, which have already slipped significantly. So I think that the department are moving away from setting a strict timetable and much more focusing on contacting everyone initially was looking at the end of next year, but that's looking like an unlikely target to hit as well. So they seem to be increasing the number of people they're contacting after a period last year where very few people seem to be contacted for various reasons. But I think the timetable now is not as strict as it was compared to the ability to try and improve and make the whole process more efficient rather than set a very strict deadline that they know they're probably likely to hit.
Now, you've said quite clearly that when that first letter arrives, do not ignore it, because I guess everyone's going to move across from disability living allowance. No one's going to be exempt. DLA's going.
That's correct. DLA is going, and on the letter there'll be a date very clearly presented on there by which time you have to contact the department to let them know you wish to apply for PIP. If you don't do that, DLA stops. It's not an option to continue with DLA. That isn't the case. People will have to apply for PIP, and if they don't within the time frame, the DLA stops, and obviously therefore essentially the support they receive for mobility, the support they receive for care, that stops too and won't be replaced by the PIP, which has the two elements, because the application process will not have been commenced. It doesn't carry on automatically. The person has to apply for it, has to commence that process.
When that second letter, that more detailed letter, arrives, that presumably kicks off the assessment process. What should people be prepared for, and is the whole of PIP assessed, or are there elements of it, depending on one's mobility and other needs, that are assessed separately to a kind of core bit of PIP?
What I would say first is that it's vital that people read the fact sheets that RNIB has produced about how to commence a PIP process. Don't go ahead without doing that. And even better, take some advice as well from someone who knows how to complete the form, because one of the perverse things about completing the form in terms of mobility and care is it requires one to present the worst case scenario, if you like, and none of us particularly wish to do that. And that's why it's important that people take advice. That's why it's important that people read the fact sheets that RNIB has produced on how to complete the form. So mobility aids, having a guidebook, for example, gets 12 points, which is a sufficient number of points. But if that's not mentioned for some reason, that means a person's making the likelihood of getting the level of mobility support from PIP that they're already receiving from DLA very, very hard to achieve. There are all sorts of areas that have to be filled in, and have to be filled in a particular way. Advice and following our fact sheets will help people an awful lot in doing that, because a certain number of people won't complete the form in the appropriate way, so their benefit may reduce from what they're receiving on the DLA compared to what they get on PIP, or worst case scenario, they won't get anything at all.
So a clear point you've made, Richard, is people mustn't feel that they're alone in this. When they have to apply for PIP, and have to they do, then they can get guidance from leaflets that RNIB has produced about claiming PIP.
Absolutely. It's really important that people do look at those fact sheets, because they're put together by welfare rights advisors based on the experience they have had of talking with claimants, some of the problems the claimants have had, and some of the frustrations about having to go further through the process, perhaps towards appeal, for example, to be able to get the benefit that someone should have received from the commencement of the process, had they completed the form in the correct way, or perhaps more accurately, in the way that the department expects the form to be completed. So yes, do read those. They're very, very helpful.
And those RNIB fact sheets about personal independence payment are free of charge. One is simply called the PIP fact sheet. The other is Your PIP Assessment Top Tips, and it could be helpful in making sure a person's individual circumstances and daily living needs are properly represented on the PIP application form. And to request either in the format of your choice, you just need to phone RNIB's helpline on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999, or you can email helpline@rnib.org.uk. And when it comes to actually making a claim, you should call the Department for Work and Pensions, or DWP for short, on the free number 0800 917 2222. That's 0800 917 2222. And they'll take initial details of your claim while you're on the phone. They'll then automatically generate a claim form for you and send it to you, which you need to complete, and as we heard, that needs to be done very carefully, and then you just send it back to the DWP.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
And that's it for another Daily Connect podcast. There will be a brand new podcast available tomorrow just after 5 p.m. On tomorrow's show, we'll be finding out more about the RNIB Big Jump coming in September. We'll be going on a blind drive challenge. Our World Connect series will continue with author Paolo Peretti. And we'll be hearing about some fantastic volunteers from RNIB Cymru. There's more of your views, and we meet a brand new guide dog on Pause for Thought. So that's tomorrow's Daily Connect podcast, available on the website, on Audio Boom, just after 5 p.m. Subscribe to the Daily Connect podcast, and I look forward to speaking to you again here on RNIB Connect Radio.
The Daily Connect podcast.